Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis with Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and some key additional guests from the Temporal Nexus.
The Department of Extra Normal Operations, Flight 237, bound for Geneva, Vartox, and Fort Roz. It's time for another Resonance Rewind.
Thank you.
I don't know, just for listening to the music of Blake Seeley there. And of course, we've got a musical, inspirational, talented soul with us on Resonance Rewinds today for, of course, the first episode of Supergirl back in 2015. Pamela Sue Mann, our own Supergirl. How are you, Pamela?
I'm great. I'm trying to educate myself on technology, but otherwise I'm great.
We've been spending years for that. Just ask Jenny Bill. How are you, Jenny?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. And not that great with technology.
Yeah, it's where the technology takes over ourselves that we need to be really careful. As indeed Robin Pierce will actually say. How are you, Robin?
Hello there. Not quite an android yet, but I'm on my way.
Indeed. But half the age that Moses was when he popped his clogs. So there we are. Just a thought on that particular basis. Moses, of course, being 120 years of age when he actually sort of finally, according to scripture at least, headed off into the great beyond. Meanwhile, talking about biblical, ethical things, Robin, would you like to take us through the precy of Supergirl?
Yes. What we're covering tonight is the pilot of the program. So it introduces all the characters, and it tweaks the origin quite a bit from the one that we saw last week for the Supergirl film. So this time around, we have Kara Zor-El being blasted off to Earth a few minutes after young Kal-El was blasted off to Earth as a baby. Now, Kara is 13 years old, and her mission is to protect her young cousin. This doesn't go as planned because the impact of the planet blowing up behind her throws her off course, and she spends 24 years in the Phantom Zone, which we've already established in the films, of course. Somehow, it's not explained in this show, she escapes the Phantom Zone after 24 years and lands on Earth late, a bit too late to be her cousin's protector, because now he's grown into a superhero that they do not name at all in this episode. Unfortunately, Kara has also bought a whole horde of super villains who followed her from the Phantom Zone, who were imprisoned there by her mother. Kara is played by Melissa Benoist, and it's hard for me to say that because I've been mispronouncing it for years. But she plays Supergirl, super perky, and she is absolutely amazing as the rather dorky Kara Danvers, working for the media conglomerate run by Cat Grant, who used to be the gossip columnist for the Daily Planet. We meet her background characters, and also we meet the team that she will always be working with, because the heroes in these series, the Arrowverse series, of which this is the third, they always had to have a backup team. Now, why Supergirl, of all people, would need backup, we'll just have to explain that later on.
So let's progress with the team. And given that it's really nip and tuck in terms of whether it's Pamela or indeed Jessica who are actually having the alter ego of Kara Danvers, why they can't just use Linda Danvers, I just don't know. In the movie, you have Linda Lee. In the comic book series, it is Linda Danvers. And of course, in this one, it's Kara Danvers. But still, it was good to see Helen Slater make a cameo appearance, of course, in the pilot as Supergirl's adoptive parent. And of course, Dean Cain, known from, of course, being the Superman of Superman and Lois in the 90s, which we haven't as yet covered. But anyway, let's go to Jessica Burtis. Jessica, what were your thoughts on this 2015 extravaganza of a girl who's very much your contemporary superheroine?
So I had seen this years ago when it first came out, and I remember watching a few episodes with my dad, and I can remember he did not like it because Supergirl kept getting beat up, and he was like, Supergirl's so strong, this wouldn't happen. But I rewatched it, and I actually really liked it when I watched it this time. I think that, you know, the iteration of Supergirl being super bright-eyed and like really happy and bubbly was nice to see. I think, you know, the actress portrayed that really well. And I thought the first episode was, it it was very, it covered a lot. And it made me want to learn more about the characters in the universe. And yeah, I think it was very dramatic in a good way. I think it was a good first episode to a series. So I genuinely want to keep watching it.
I'm sorry, darling. I just can't hear you over the loud color of your pants. Just one of the lines that actually came through from, of course, Calista Flockhart's incarnation of Cat Grant. Others that I particularly enjoyed that worked through this. It's not that I don't see you frown. It's just that I don't care enough to ask you why you're frowning. Samandra Samanari's, and of course, the final one, which could actually sort of suit very much our next reviewer. I know many of you are used to being second best, but it's new to me. Jenny Bill, I don't know if any of those apply to your good self in terms of the vitriol that Cat Grant actually pours out, or at least Calista Flockhart. She was such a change when she was Ally McBeal. Still, never mind. Perhaps that's what being Mrs. Harrison Ford does for you. Jenny, what are your thoughts on this one?
I've heard of it, but I have never seen an episode from this series before. And I didn't dislike it. I mean, I enjoyed it. I actually didn't really inspire me to want to watch more. I actually thought it was very typical of American TV series of the sort of past 10 years, whereas a lot of young people and there's a lot of great dialogue, a lot of fast talking. Everything happens very, very quickly. I did like the fact that a lot happened, that it was very fast paced. I thought the acting was great. The script was great. And obviously the lady, I've forgotten the girl's name. She is really fantastic as the Supergirl and as her sort of non-Supergirl incarnation. So, yeah, a lot of positive things about it.
So thumbs up for Melissa Benoist, and presumably her sister also, Shyla, gets a nod for playing Alex Danvers, a new creation for this particular side of things in this incarnation of the Arrowverse and work from there. Also, James Olsen, of course, as portrayed by Maykad Brooks. An initial love interest of that. And let's not forget to mention, British actor David Harewood, who does a wonderful line of Hank Henshaw, who, spoiler alert, actually does metamorphose into a different character if you continue watching the series and so on. But again, a classic line which could almost be summing up so many magical things from Hank Henshaw. Nothing says covert operation better than a flying woman in a red skirt. It could almost be a theme from one of your albums, Pamela Suman, but you were inspired to produce something which I think does echo this whole notion of the superhero in terms of the bells. So before we go on to find out about what you thought about the episode, why are we about to listen to this one, which you felt did tie in? And I have to say it does very significantly, if you listen to the lyrics and more, with this particular episode we're considering.
It's almost best if I choose the song before I know anything about what we're watching, even, because there is a strange comic connection that keeps happening, much more so than if I thought about it, watched the episode and said, which song would be best? You know, a bell is really, I wrote it in Ireland when I was, I went there for the first time with Jerry, my husband, who's Irish. And it was, we went to a disused abbey with ancient ruins, you know, with no ceiling. And I saw the, you know, wildlife growing out of the windows. It was just like spectacular and beautiful as Irish is. Ireland is, as Jessica knows, she was there. May still be there. So the song became a journey, a bell. And it was all this imagined idea of, you know, I guess now that I've read a lot more on the study of literature, that it is really sort of typically the hero's journey. So the quest, and which Supergirl obviously was very much on the traditional idea of the quest. Yes. So too is a bell, you know, because at the end of the song, my character reaches the bell and tolls the bell and sort of, you know, meets the rite of passage, if you will. So I think that's probably the connection that works better than if I had like cognitively thought of it.
Who knows what magical ways the cosmos actually works, but let's actually hear it. Thank you.
Cautiously I ascend the ancient stairwell in the pale light of day. Winding round and round, I don't know what I'll find. I've not traveled this way. I must feel every step in a most balanced way. Green moss lifts the stone. Eventually I feel a cool breeze on my head. A new story is shown. And space and the wall where a door may have been, all that's left of it now. What I feel keeps me moving ahead to the space. What I fear I must know. I try to breathe as I keep moving closer, and once through the space I will go.
So back to yourself, Pamela. We've heard the song about. What did you make of this particular episode, though? Was it your first time for a Greg Berlanti, Ali Adler, and Adrian Kreisberg episode?
I believe it's the first time choosing to sit down and watch this. Okay. Being American and being sort of self-classifying for many years, as I'm trying to grow as an alternative, sort of more independent fringe sort of artist who would prefer like an Ingmar Bergman film. I have avoided through most of my adult life big Hollywood productions with big budgets. And the thing is, the interesting thing is watching it in this context, I see it's all incredibly done. It's cast incredibly well. The actors are top-notch actors. They have perfect teeth. They're stunning. And the story clips along, and it, you know, it's like a comic book come to life, and it's larger than life. And but personally, I it's hard for me to watch that kind of television. It's really hard for me because it's not quirky or real, or it doesn't have the things that I search out when I watch TV or film, just to be honest. But I did, I really liked Melissa Benoist. I thought she was very charming, and she reminded me a little bit of Claire Danes. She just had this real funk, and she was very good at being a dork, which I think is excellent. And Hank, I didn't put it together that he was the British actor, but he was fantastic, and he was such an excellent potential love interest for her. It was their chemistry was absolutely sweet. You know, the characters were very boldly drawn, and what the costuming and everything. I, you know, as a girl, I was just a little bit like, oh, but overall, thumbs up.
It's all to do with aerodynamics. The cape is all about the aerodynamic routine. That's why you need to have a cape. You know, it's something I've been trying to persuade Robin to do for years. And you know that you can't quantify emotions based on an algorithm. Isn't that right, Robin?
Absolutely. I've deleted that particular algorithm.
So looking at the cast there, I mean, obviously we've got James Olsen, Mekhi Brooks there. We've got David Harewood. We've got obviously the one season only, sadly, although she does actually crop up in cameo role because they shipped filming off to Canada as opposed to staying in Hollywood, Calista Flockhart and California. Shyla Lee, of course, and Melissa Benoist. Plus, of course, the wonderful Wynne Schott played by Jeremy Jordan. How did it work for yourself? Because I think there are lots of nods in the direction of the Superman, Supergirl, Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster legend. There are connections within that. This is slightly darker in incarnation. We, of course, have the Fort Roz scenario that comes through with that. And, of course, the whole notion of the main villain in this piece, the reptilian-oriented vortex, maybe a kind of a nod in the direction of the fact that Fort Roz doesn't just imprison Kryptonians, it imprisons villains from all over the galaxy. And of course, you've also got the line of David Harewood's character of saying that the reason for setting up the Department of Extra Normal Operations is to do with all these darned immigrants who are trying to get into the United States. Why don't they just build a wall? You know, surely this is at the heart of Trumpism and so on. Actually, the whole series runs through the Trump presidency. It's coming to the end in the Biden presidency. What are your thoughts, Robin?
Well, actually, I would have preferred the president as portrayed in Supergirl, where in later seasons she was played by Linda Carter. Let's just take the pilot film first. I thought this was a really good, strong pilot. It absolutely flowed for the first half. We had a really dramatic and really well done for TV when you think about it. Airplane rescue, taking you up to the halfway mark. Then the third quarter seems to me to sag a little bit. And we've got quite a rousing fourth quarter. It all bodes well. And whereas I speak very highly of the pilot film, especially the performances, I mean, I was watching this as it was broadcast, and it came as a big surprise to me that Hank Henshaw turns out to be the Martian Manhunter. Because, of course, at that point, we hadn't seen the Snyder cut, The Justice League, where he plays a much bigger part, the Manhunter, not the actor. And it moves along very well. But there's, to me, a critical problem with all the Arrowverse series. And they eventually lost my interest because they collapsed under the weight of their own overbearing wokeness. They managed to make The Flash the slowest moving television series on TV. He never needed a team. You just ran fast. With Supergirl, as the seasons progressed, it became about everybody but Supergirl, who was absolutely incidental for half these series. And they were these long, season-long arcs. And if you didn't care for the story, I mean, with a more episodic series, if you don't like this week's, maybe you'll like next week's. But with these, if the story didn't grab you in the first three episodes, well, you are stuck for about another 19 weeks. And I found that to be a little bit hard going. And I gave up after season four, I think, because I really couldn't take it anymore.
But there's only one more season six, to actually go through, five and six.
Yeah,
six
I didn't watch season five at all, and I have no intention of watching season six. But what's really odd is the Greg Berlanti DC series, which aren't on Sky or Channel 4, the ones that are on the streaming services, like Stargirl, Black Lightning, and the Doom Patrol, I think they are far quirkier and work far, far better because they're not trying to be all-inclusive in every single episode, because you don't have to include everybody in every episode. There are some episodes that some people just don't fit in, but, you know, don't have them come on and announce what their particular issue is, because we don't need it.
Okay, so signposting, obviously a bit of a challenge from yourself, Robin. No doubt the classic line of the Pierce household will be, Robin, move your head. Sorry, not in the Greg Berlanti line of that end of the whole sequence. Jessica, is that a fair comment? Or do you think that actually, you know, just taking as we are doing today, really just this one episode, you think actually it's strong enough? It actually sort of adjusts the whole thing quite nicely. Melissa Benoist works well, and the rest of the ensemble cast are pretty effective too.
I liked the secondary characters. I thought they worked well, but I haven't watched the rest of the series. So they might end up, I don't know, it might end up being not how the pilot was and how strong it kind of was with that introduction. I do feel like some shows, if they try to kind of do too much, focusing on like things that don't make sense for the plot and kind of trying to like preach on certain like other things, it can kind of draw away from the actual like plot, because I think people just, they want to watch it for Supergirl, they want to watch it for a superhero show. But I don't know, some shows can do that well and others don't, so I'm guessing maybe this one didn't do it so well, if Robin's saying that. I actually have more issues with, like, just, I guess, little things with this show. I don't know. It shocked me that she didn't use her powers for, like, years at all. That, like, blew my mind. I'm just like, if you can fly, how would you not just, like, take advantage of that?
Because she had a dominating sister who basically said, don't do it. It was issues from the start there, basically.
But her sister and I, but also like the glasses, was it ever explained why she wore glasses at all? If she didn't need to hide her identity?
I think the line that she was working for Catco and she wanted to actually sort of make a change in the world kind of took it through that. And there was an echo within that. Although arguably the movie we considered last week demonstrated a slightly different way in which she had a complete change of style, hair color as well, in terms of Superman's cousin, who, of course, was emerged, I think, in 59 or 1960 originally, or that sort of line. Pamela, is it too much of a challenge in which the inclusivity, which is very commendable, is sometimes too explicit, and actually we need to reduce the explicitness of the inclusivity and our diversity field? Or is it a case of you can never be too explicit when it comes to inclusivity and diversity?
You know, now I'm casting whenever my daughter gets them, they have a five paragraphs of legalese on the bottom about non-discriminating. And I think that there's, you know, it was that way a bit in the modeling world and the acting world, but now it's just part of it, where it has to be so politically correct and, as you say, so woke. And I might have my own personal thoughts about that, but I feel that it detracts. If you think of so many of the phenomenal things you love, and if you were to really
throughout history that you've seen, you know, in film and television. I mean, you were taking notes of all the incorrectness, you know, the dialogue, the characters, the, how they're portrayed. There's so much incorrectness. And I have actual arguments with my daughter. Now that she's turning 16, there's a kind of ceasing. But the age 15 was like this roaring argument about what's correct and what's not correct and what you can't say and who has to be in it. And it detracts from the story. There's so many things to consider. I have a friend who's a novelist, and she just wrote a YA book, fantastic fantasy book. And there's so much they had to change, and they weren't even being inappropriate. It's just, you know, it's now laden by legalese of what you have to do in order not to get sued or in order not to get canceled or somehow blacklisted. It's sort of like that in America and Hollywood. If the pendulum has swung to the other side. So I do think it gets in the way, and it detracts from something that could be more straightforward and quaint and human, you know?
Yeah, extraordinary that Gene Roddenberry managed to actually have an all-inclusive cast of the Starship Enterprise of the original Star Trek without having to have five pages of legalese. But in fact, in many ways, he was having to battle against that whole system. But that's for another show and another debate. We listened to a bit of music from Blake Seeley now, of course, addressing the whole notion of the reveal of her powers to win shock. There's the reveal, of course, Jenny. We're back to yourself again. Do you feel as though, in essence, that there is an issue with respect to this? I mean, I didn't feel it was so heavy on this particular episode. I take Robin's point that as the series progresses, there are areas when you tend to think, do we really need to have this made as explicit as it actually is? But what are your thoughts?
I don't think that it particularly came across in this pilot episode. I certainly feel that I did think all the way through it that there was an abundance of characters that were being introduced, which I can see that as the series goes on, there's going to be lots of things that's going to be going on with all the different characters. Because we were doing the pilot episode, I did read things about the series and themes that were introduced. But as I said before, this was the first time I have ever really seen any episode from this series or even read anything about it.
Does it tempt you to do a deep dive into the many Greg Berlanti oriented series?
No, as I said, I think in the first time I spoke, I enjoyed it, but it didn't entice me to watch anymore. I think the thing is that nowadays I find personally, you know, and I'm sure it's the same for everybody else, that you don't have all the time in the world, and you're just, you know, the market is saturated with things that you're always thinking, wow, that looks good, that looks good. And you can watch something and you can really enjoy it and you can see that it's a really quality product, but it might not be something that entices you to continue, particularly as there's six series. I don't have time to watch six series of Supergirl.
Some are shorter than others. Some are only 20 episodes. Some are 16. So, Jessica, let's turn to characterizations, because obviously that's one of the key things why we produce Residents Rewind, to for folk possibly who might be sort of considering or reflecting on the whole thing. What or who are your key favorite characters from this particular episode?
So I feel like, you know, we didn't really get to see too in depth with all the characters so far, but I really liked her boss. Is her name Kat? Is that her name? She's so funny. I think like one of her first lines when she got on the elevator, she was like, I have a private elevator so I don't have to like smell other people's cologne, like somebody bathe or something. Like, it was just so funny.
You know, and prescient in the light of obviously our COVID challenges. I mean, she was ahead of the game, basically. That's why she has her own media empire.
She's a visionary, you know? So I thought she was a great character. She just added like a lot of humor. Yeah, she was very funny and a little bit antagonistic without being like a bad villain or anything like that. So I thought that was really nice.
Pamela?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, you know, that type of one, I think maybe because I'm American and I've been to LA quite a bit, that type of character really frightens me. She's too perfect looking, and it's hard, you know, it's hard to get past that. But I do think the characters, I mean, like I said, I think they nailed it with, you know, Melissa in the casting. I think they really nailed it. I think she was the perfect person to play that kind of show as that kind of character. I think sometimes, as I said, you know, when they have to write all these other things into it, you know, that's what the soup is of the character, and that they're adding all these dimensions about, you know, their background and this and that. I think it was all incredibly well suited for this purpose, for this particular production, and it seems like they were very successful at executing it the way they wanted to. And so for that, it was top notch. It was done really well. My personal feelings aside. So yeah, I think it was cast really well. I think the characters were very clear about who they were. There was no question about that. The hiding, what Jessica said about why didn't she fly if she could. I'll tell you one thing. If I could fly, I would fly. You know, I would sneak out in the middle of the night and just go up in the air when nobody was looking. If you have that kind of power, you know, I don't know who wouldn't use it. I mean, would anyone here not use it if they were just told not to use it?
We couldn't possibly tell you, Pamela. It would be sort of in breach of our superheroic identities. I'm just saying. So Melissa Benoist very much winning from that point of view. Jenny, what about yourself? I mean, James Olsen as opposed to Jimmy Olsen. Again, different dimension, different universe, not like sort of Mark McClure character we were used to in the Sal Kind era and so on. But who gets it for yourself? Or is it Shyla Lee? Alex Danvers, of course, the sister of, the stepsister of Cara Dune.
I thought actually the sister character was like the weakest character of all the characters. The guy, I liked the guy that was like the one that had the crush on her that she told that she could fly and who was doing her outfit.
Win shot.
I really liked him. I thought he was cool.
And again, he loses out to James Olsen. Who'd have thought it? And Robin, from your own point of view, where are you going? Is it going to be Hank Henshaw, or would you actually throw a curveball and go for the commander played by Farhan Tahir, of course, who has that wonderful sort of end run and, of course, criticises Vartox, played by Owen Yeoman?
Neither one of those. let's go and have a look at Melissa Benoist first. I mean, she was all right. She did what the script said.
Pamela just said she was perfect casting, honestly.
She's not really the best Supergirl. That's still Helen Slater. Sorry, guys, she's not even the second best Supergirl. That's clearly Laura Vandervoort in Smallville, who did it far, far better. What kind of spoils this for me is they don't mention Superman by name at all, or Man of Steel, or anything like that. It's always my cousin, or the big guy, or the guy in the blue suit. It's all a bit coy, isn't it? It's all a bit like Harry Potter. Oh, he who we can't name. Oh, come on, guys. We all know what you're talking about. Quit it, for goodness sakes. So I don't know why they couldn't mention him unless it was something to do with the films coming out, Man of Steel coming out at around the same time, but they were all made by the same company. So that makes no sense whatsoever to me. But the character that really grabbed me in this, without a doubt, Calista Flockhart. Like Jessica said, she had all the best lines, stole every scene she was in. Melissa Benoist, I'm sorry, but when you look at it, all they did was change Supergirl's civilian identity into Clark Kent. That's all they did. And all she did was basically what Christopher Reeve had done. But she was adorable doing it. But, you know, it was all a bit too familiar, like they walking into, you know, the 21st century of a major metropolitan newspaper building and you know, sort of trying to fit in. It was all a bit familiar.
Well, Glenn Winter, of course, had cut his directing teeth on Smallville. But it's brought us round to the scores. So, Pamela, your score for the pilot episode of Supergirl.
But I must be true to myself. I'm being kind and I'm giving it a 7. Yeah, because I'm balancing out my personal feelings in that type of a show with how it was done.
Excellent. Okay. Jessica, what's your number for consideration for this one?
I think probably a 7.5. I think it was done well and I enjoyed it. I think it was very deliberate, like every choice, and it was very deliberate. It felt very structured. But I'd be interested in watching more. So I think it was good.
And Blake Neely's music, whilst it clearly actually has its roots in the work of John Williams and so on, and has those soaring themes, as indeed he has in most of the Arrow Universe things, you probably need to listen to it several hundred times before it begins to sync with you. But it is well put together. For that matter, I'm probably going to go 7.5 or 8 myself. But Jenny, that's, in a sense, the good part of the team. Where are you going to go now?
Well, I've never given a half before, but I'm not going to just give it a half. No, I'm going to give it 5.5. So it's just a little bit more than 50%.
And Robin, of course, our very own Fort Ros inhabitant from North Wales. Where are you going to go?
I am so interested to find out that I am the last member of the bad side of the team.
You're wearing black, Robin. Clearly, that's a message. All villains, black t-shirt.
For this episode, well, it does get a little bit brighter, you know. for this episode, I would go as high as a 6. But if we were looking at the episode, you know, the series as a whole, I would have to say that it degenerates into a 3. But 6 for this.
Degenerates. In this town, dirty enough already. Just a word from next week's edition of the wonderful Resonance Rewind, where we dwell back into the Outer Limits and the Sixth Finger, with David McCallum taking the lead role, who indeed does utter those words. We'll also find out what's going to happen to the housekeeper and how to actually cope with a heart attack and more as we explore the evolution of Bach. And whether mankind in general will be
seriously,
spending the
you're
future.
Going to tell me how to handle a heart attack?
It is a thought, and it'll also explore the notion of whether mankind will procreate but not create in terms of challenges to actually work through. So that's next week. The Outer Limits and the Sixth Finger episode is what we'll be considering then. For the moment, though, to Jenny Bill, to Pamela Sue Men, of course, if you were taken, and why wouldn't you be, by Pamela's awesome inspired track there, The Bell, you can, of course, go to PamelaSueManMusic.com and find out where you can actually purchase these things online and much, much more. To Jessica in Ireland, of course, as ever, superheroic lines from that point of view. And to Jenny in Newcastle, and of course, coping with basically having to sort of deal with injuries that she sustained, and of course wearing an interesting black line there, which is tying in with her role as a hospitality host for Newcastle United Football Club as well. Just shows how much you actually take that line. And to Robin Pearce, of course, Star Wars wearing soul from North Wales, keep on keeping on, and of course keep on resonating.